All right, guys. Well, thanks for coming on this roundtable. We're just starting up. So just if anyone listened last time, we do have some repeat guests. That's not the intent, but that's who was available because apparently some sport was being played that was important and some handsome guy beat some Atlanta team. But, you know, the idea is to rotate in different hosts, but this is who is free today. These are the people who are cultured, refined, educated, and don't care about the Super Bowl. I'll start with you, Daniel. You're on the far left. Introduce yourself, talk about your show briefly, and give your Twitter handle.
Are we doing it right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So my name
did
is
you,
Daniel.
Did you? My voice changed, like my tone. You know,
I did not notice that at all.
Well, did you? Okay, so did the other two people on the line? Did James Hollis and Rachel? Or actually, Rachel, I can edit this if not. Do you want your last name out there? Is that a thing?
No, please edit that out. Not put my last name.
Okay, all right. Okay, so James Hollis and at Rachel Hoops, like, did you guys get that the episode started?
I did. Now, let's, one more edit. Just call her Rachel. The at Rachel Hoops is going to be, it's freaking me out. Let's just call her Rachel. How about that?
I think he meant to introduce me. And then from then on, obviously you'll call me Rachel, not my full name.
Yeah. That first part just sounded awkward.
Anyways, you know, Daniel, introduce yourself. We're started.
So my name is Daniel Green. You can find me on Twitter at Daniel A Green 1. That's green like the color. And I do a podcast called DG Courtroom, which is mostly DFS related, but also more general basketball as well.
Okay. Well, and then James, you're next. Host of the Truth podcast, and the Truth had his last episode. Or his last game. All right.
Yeah, and thank God it's over with. Now we can go back to not caring what Paul Pierce is doing. James Hollis, host of the Truth podcast, right, for B-Ball Breakdown. I'm also the co-host of the Press Basketball Away Team podcast. You can find me on Twitter at jholishoops. And, yeah, that's it.
All right. Well, awesome. And the star of this episode is ABPN's newest member. If you don't follow her yet and you're someone who cares about Giannis Antetokounmpo, if you're listening to this episode, you should care about Giannis Antetokounmpo. Listen, go follow her. Definitely listen to her podcast, which is going to be debuting on the network really soon. Rachel, we're super happy to have you. And, you know, we're excited to announce that you're going to be the host of Hear the Deer. It's our new Bucks team podcast.
Yes. Yes. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So say a little bit about yourself and then we can talk about real basketball.
Okay, well, my name's Rachel, and I like basketball a lot. I watch it pretty much every day, and I just started tweeting about it for fun, and now I recently joined Brew Hoop, which is a SB Nation affiliate, and I talk about the Bucks on there. I'm going to start doing some stuff for them, and now I'm officially hosting Hear the Deer, and I am on Twitter at Rachel Hoops. That's spelled differently. I get told I spell my name incorrect a lot, but it's meant to be like that. It's Rachel like Michael, so RachelHoops.
Yeah, people should get used to that. I mean, do people spell Chris Dunn's name wrong? Actually, they probably do.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Well, so let's start from the top. If you guys have do you have the outline now?
Yes.
You guys.
Man. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's on Slack, bro. We always look at Slack. Duh.
I make this top secret Slack and you guys don't even use it. All right. So, we're starting at the top.
The name of the app is Slack. All right, so we gotta be slack about using it.
Slackers.
Make sure you put like a zing sound or something in that when you edit that. That was a good one.
I'll think about it. All right, last roundtable episode. If you haven't listened to it yet, it went really well. I was super happy about it. You know, Daniel and James were on it. Rachel and I were not. Last episode, it was hosted by Richie Randall and Spencer, who are the two guys covering the Hornets for us. And they talked about the latest NBA trade. But, you know, now that we have a Bucks show, we can talk to the host and see from the Bucks perspective, what do you think about the trade?
First of all, I want to know for the record, even though Rachel is our Bucks podcast, I am from Wisconsin originally. So the Bucks, that's my original team, grew up. Like back in the day when it was Big Dog, back even before that, like Todd Day and those guys. Yeah, so I just want everyone to know that.
That's cool.
So I'm very excited to hear Rachel's opinions on this because this means a lot to me.
Oh, God. Well, I hope I don't disappoint. But I mean, honestly, it's purely for cap space. Like if this was for anything but cap space, I would be absolutely devastated and upset. I mean, even as it is now, I sort of just look at those two names and I'm just like, oh, wow. I'm glad we got rid of Plumlee's contract. I'm excited to have someone with a player option in Spencer Hawes. I'm excited about having money available and being able to free up some money. But if this was purely for, you know, on the court reasons, I'd be devastated. Like when I heard we got Roy Hibbert, I was just, the players I'm not entirely happy with, their contracts I am, and the cap space I'm happy with.
I mean, you guys, the Bucks now at this point have five centers, maybe six, depending on that. Okay, so Thon, Hibbert, Henson, who Haas, are the other guys? Haas and
don't forget Monroe.
Oh, right, Monroe. So yeah, all right, five centers on the Bucks. I mean, at least you have the option of not playing Roy Hibbert, who I think is probably the worst out of those five players. I mean, from an on-court perspective and a locker room perspective, I mean, we've talked about off-air Spencer Hawes being a dildo. Do you guys know anything about that?
About him being a dildo?
Yeah. Like yeah, he's like a Trumpy and
yeah, I think him and Andrew Bogut are two alt-right jerks cut from the same cloth. Where yeah, they both are very very heavy right leaning, and I think Stiles was wearing those throw Hillary in jail shirts and stuff in the locker room. So
yeah,
So I mean, it is what it is, and. Let's obviously he's been on several teams around the league. He's played with, you know, he's been in the NBA. So I guess they don't let things affect him like that in the locker room and they keep it to a minimum. So whatever.
Yeah.
But as far as being a player, he can stretch the floor. He can rebound a little bit. So at least he's kind of useful. And I'm thinking with all the length and athleticism they have in Milwaukee right now, Rachel, I know you don't like Hibbert, but let's think about how they use Hibbert in Indiana. Right. I know Milwaukee's a lot more, let's say, when Giannis isn't on the floor and they maybe want to slow it down. They got length around him, and you can actually maybe, you know, throw Hibbert out there for a couple minutes, and he's a legit rim protector still, and he's, you know, he's a legit rim deterrent. So maybe you can find some use for him, and if not, I don't know. Is he expiring? How much?
Yeah, he's expiring. He's got, like, $6 million expiring that's going to come off the books. There
you go. So no matter
he has it's $5 million deal.
Yeah, so that's. I think I said on the other roundtable, it's like trading a sack full of cat poop for a sack full of dog poop. It's not really, nothing's gonna move the needle, I guess, you know. But I know Milwaukee does need something in the middle because Henson, I think, hasn't been cutting it. If I'm correct.
Yeah, Henson's kind of disappointing for me as a player. Daniel, do you think Hawes is gonna start?
I mean, I first of all, I just think the Bucks traded for two statues. You have one statue who will stand right in like two feet from the rim, and one who will stand by the 3-point line. So what was the original question?
Do you think Hawes is going to start?
Do you think Hawes starts?
Yeah.
Oh God! I mean, first of all, if you've been following Jason Kidd with big men, who the hell knows what that guy's going to do? God. I mean, he's crazy. I mean,
he's crazy.
He'll play them 10 minutes, or he won't play any, play someone for like 10 straight games, and then he'll start him out of the blue and play him 30 minutes. So if I knew that, especially as a DFS guy, you know, I'd be rolling in money right now. I have no idea what Kidd's going to do. I could see him at some point starting all of those centers. But the one thing I do agree with Rachel.
At the same time?
What's that?
At the same time?
I thought that's what he meant. I thought that's what he meant.
Honestly, if Kidd did that, I wouldn't be surprised either. Why not start him? I could see him playing each one a quarter, like 12 minutes each, like equality for all. He's that crazy when it comes to big men.
So, Rachel, they've been throwing some minutes at Thon Maker for the first time. In his rookie season. So this trade strikes me as important because, you know, not that Plumlee was good, because all of the Plumlees are relative to the rest of the league, not very good basketball players. So it's not so much that. I think what it means is that, like, Thon Maker really should, you know, bust out there as the best guy, because, like, I feel like didn't answer their center problems. And I think that we've known for a while that Greg Monroe, though he's been really underrated probably off the bench this year, probably doesn't fit as a starter.
Wait, so here's my question. Wait,
Rachel, are you there? Because she's covering the Bucks, you know?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, I'm asking both of you guys this. Real quick aside, sorry. What's wrong with Monroe as a starter? Because he's been really good this year, and he's been better than advertised on defense, and he's been a reliable scorer. So what's the beef with him as a starter?
Just to back up James, I'll throw out his stats because I looked him up. I mean, in January alone, in only 25 minutes, dude put up 14 points, almost 8 rebounds. So he has been playing pretty well. So
yeah, Rachel, what do you think?
Well, Kidd has explicitly said he likes Monroe coming off the bench. And one thing that I thought was just awkward and uncomfortable and showed sort of a disconnect was Kidd was talking to the media. He said, Monroe's totally fine coming off the bench. We've talked about it. It's cool. He's a respectable guy, whatever. And then that same day, Monroe was talking to the media, and he said, hey, why am I coming off the bench? Why don't you talk to Kidd, or why don't you ask Kidd that? And I was kind of like, dang.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that, there was obviously a disconnect. There was a miscommunication there. If Monroe really didn't know why he was coming off the bench, and Kidd to the media was like, yeah, he knows it's for the best, and he gets it. But clearly he didn't. And he was unhappy. I don't know personally, but he seemed to be unhappy for a little while there because, I mean, with the minutes situation, Kidd is, like you guys said, his minutes don't really make sense to me, and I don't think anyone can get in a rhythm when he sits you out for 5-10 games, or he'll start to let you play 3 minutes then take you out the rest of the game. Like, I don't personally get his minutes,
and players don't like that.
Yeah, I mean, who would? It's just gonna be, the rotations never seem to make sense to me. And every time I think we get something going, he switches it. Like, I personally really liked Brogdon in the starting lineup. Me and too. Then, yeah, and then Delly came back, and
God, Delly sucks so bad.
I'm sorry, like, nothing against, I'm not even going to talk about him as a person or, like, his past with injuries and injuring other players, even though I just added that in. But, he's just not good. Like, he does the same thing every time. He does the same runner, and he does the same, half the time you don't know if he's throwing up a shot or if he's throwing up a lob, because it's just awful.
Okay, that's actually a really interesting place to go, because I think that's like the fundamental issue, right? I mean, we've talked about they have a whole fleet of centers who, as Daniel described them, they're statues. They're not good. Delly has not been good. Across the bench, they have Tony Snell, who is a Chicago reject, and Chicago's not so hot themselves. They just have a really bad bench, and what that means is that there's going to be crucial minutes for them if they go with the best lineup. And here's the thing, right? I think the reason why they've been bringing Monroe off the bench is, specifically this year, he's in so much better shape, and he could play with the starters. I think you guys are right. But he synergizes really, really well with Brogdon, right? So most of the season, they were bringing the two of those guys off the bench, and Kidd didn't want to split them up, right? But, I mean, the thing is, though, right, why don't you just move them into the starters, right? Because Chris Middleton, I'm not sure if you guys knew this, I'm sure Rachel did, is coming back on Wednesday, right?
Yes, Wednesday.
Okay. So he's coming back on Wednesday, and so now, assuming you know Middleton looks good, you could start a really good lineup, I think, of Brogdon and then Chris Middleton, Jabari, Giannis, and Greg Monroe, right? The problem there is like that bench unit is horrific. What would that bench unit even be, Rachel? Like, okay. I don't even know.
They have, when he gets going, which is occasionally, he does the threes. He's with the threes, but honestly, I am a Michael Beasley fan. Like, I don't care. Honestly, I love Michael Beasley. No, I do. And he's actually been good for the offense, and he's been good with giving energy. He can be a spark off the bench. He can randomly get hot. Besides him, really,
no, I think he's a really good fit, and like they need someone to run the system off the bench because, like we're saying, their bench is outside of those five guys. I mean, who do you think are the best players on the Bucks?
Outside of this, oh geez,
outside of Brogdon, Middleton, Giannis, Jabari, and Greg Monroe, who really sticks through 10.
Yeah, I mean it's got to be like Dellavedova and Henson.
Oh, no.
No.
Beasley.
Dellavedova is not that high.
I mean, at least he does play defense, though. I mean, you give him that. And, first of all, the Bucks bench, like Chris said, it's a disaster. So,
I was going to agree with you, Rachel, but no. But, I mean, let's really look at their team. I mean,
yeah, look at the roster.
And that's why they don't start Greg Monroe, right? They would have absolutely nothing on the bench.
But Chris, like, I agree with that. I think Monroe would be fine off the bench because then he can be he can kind of run the second unit through him. But this is the problem with Kidd. He won't even commit to that. He won't like give Monroe consistently 25 minutes a game like he did in January at least. But in the past, he'll just go away from that for no reason and then just won't play him for 10 games. Which then that's the infuriating part that I don't understand about Jason Kidd.
Yeah.
So you guys,
go ahead.
I was gonna say, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think with Jason Kidd, he coaches a lot by feel, where a lot of other coaches, you know, they stick with rotation and they try to put guys into positions to be comfortable. And I don't know if that's something from, you know, that's what's so hard about great players being coaches, because he kind of expects, but for him it's like, well, just go out there and play. He doesn't really understand, because of how good he was as a player, that how it might affect other players to not get consistent minutes.
Right. And switch up who they're playing with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's a good point.
That's okay. So I didn't know if I was crazy about this. That's his coaching thing, where he kind of coaches by feel. Well, this guy might be hot, so I'm gonna play him longer, and he'll do that not just for one game, but yeah, like you said, he won't get guys consistent minutes.
Yeah, but even if he did it by feel, you'd think that if a rotation wasn't working, he'd stop pushing it then. Like, if he went off a feel,
that's part of coaching by feel, right? Is that you, like, think it's good. Yeah, well, I mean, like, he probably, actually, the Bucks just hired a really good guy who is good at analytics. I think it was the guy who was running Nylon Calculus, right?
Yeah, I think my boy Seth Partnow, I think.
Yeah, well...
Yes.
I mean, he's doing a really good job, but, like, Jason Kidd must be dismissing it, though.
Right, but he can run it all he wants to. If Jason Kidd doesn't look at the, you know, the profiles and the stat breakdown, and he does look at it and say, okay, well, that's just stats, and, you know, he's an old-school kind of player. Well, the eye is different. I like the way this guy plays, so I'm going to use him. So, who knows, right? And I'll defer to Rachel on that one.
I think one thing I noticed that he's kind of pulled back on it a bit, but I honestly believe he was playing Jason Terry simply because they were teammates. Like he was giving Jason Terry minutes when Jason Terry should not have been on the floor. Like Jason Terry was playing crucial. He's played crucial fourth quarter minutes. That is just like, what is he doing there? And it's just that Kidd, I guess, trusts him because of a past relationship or something, but he seems, I mean, there really isn't even an answer behind Kidd's madness. Like he just picks and chooses, and like there are just times that he puts players on the floor that should not be there. There's no reason for Dellavedova to be playing a crucial fourth quarter, 4 minutes left, tight game because he's just going to mess it up. And like Jason Terry, I don't really know why he's getting fourth quarter minutes anyways. He's pulled back a bit on Jason Terry's minutes, but I just, I don't know, man.
Jason Terry got 19 minutes yesterday. Just sickening.
Yeah. Oh man, I didn't even, I think he made, I got to look up and see. I don't even remember what he, what his stats were.
Probably zeros across the board.
Wow.
So, okay. So outside of Brogdon, Middleton, outside of those five guys, right? The sort of five guys, I actually do want to figure out who's 6 through 10. I think six is Henson six. I really like Mizra Teletovic. I just feel like he's being totally underutilized, though.
I'll go. We didn't count Snell in the top five, right?
No.
So I mean, look.
Yeah, Snell's probably six.
That is tragic. That is.
We can say, check this out. I don't know if you guys knew this, but in Chicago, he was known as like the plus minus god or the plus minus wonder child or something. Because as ugly as stats were, him being on the court, he did things and he always had a really positive plus minus.
Well, it's because the spacing was so bad in Chicago that like.
Well, I think it's the same kind of thing in Milwaukee, right? And like, I mean, 8 points a game, you know, three rebounds, but he's shooting the ball well, 39% from three. It's, and you know, he's still a long arm, can be disruptive defender, even if he's not some lockdown guy. It is what it is, man. I mean, he's one of those players teams need. He's not a star. He's not even, you know, the rotation player that can, he's playing almost 30 minutes a night. Do you want more from him? Sure, but this is who he is, and he does positive things on the floor. So
okay, yeah. Is Snell six then?
I'd say so, probably.
Probably.
And then seven, yeah. Henson maybe.
Honestly, we don't have to like Deli, but I mean, he's part of the rotation and. There's something to be said for a guy who eats up 26 minutes a night in your rotation. Even if I guess
we can put him at seven. Whatever.
Okay, so and then Deli.
Then Henson.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
real quick, you guys, what's going on with Henson? Because I thought he would have been a great fit with what they're doing. He's long. He's kind of athletic. He's
Jason Kidd's going with Henson, man.
Henson had just been sitting, riding the bench.
Yeah.
And he actually, Henson posted something like he gave his neighbors at his apartment complex tickets to the game. And they left him a sign that said, thanks for the tickets. The Bucks would have won if you had played, because that night he had 0 minutes, just like usual. He had been not playing at all. And he posted that. And like, I can't remember what he captioned it, but it was sort of like, give me minutes. And he's been fighting for them. And he said something the other day that was like, I'm going to make my minutes worthwhile. I'm going to show them that I deserve to play. And the past two games, he actually has been a factor. He's been good. He's definitely fighting for a spot, and he's fighting for his minutes back because they have definitely been taken away from him.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not the biggest fan of Henson. I really like his physical tool set until you like look a little bit deeper about like, I mean, he's got like, I mean, a weird frame and like a short torso and like, I think that like affects his ability to be vertical. And of course you can get over stuff like that. Right. But I mean, that in combination with the fact that like, He definitely goes for blocks, right? Rather than contesting, rather than like affecting the shot as much as possible. He, you know, probably goes for blocks a little too much. I mean, I'm not the biggest Henson fan. I mean, I don't know. That's just me though. But I think
the problem here though is like, what's the other options, right? So we talked about Monroe.
Right. Right.
Thon.
Right, so you got Thon Maker, and then now we're bringing in two statues, or Hibbert and Hawes. I mean,
yeah, to the me, Bucks bench Henson, is atrocious.
To me, Henson still is probably deserves minutes out of those you know studs.
I mean, if he keeps putting the effort in that he's doing right now, then definitely.
Dude, all Henson's right. averaging 13 and 9 and 2.5 blocks per 36. I mean, that's not bad. That's production.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's what's crazy, James. It's like Henson and Monroe, when they get like regular minutes, they both seem to do okay. And sometimes stats can be a little misleading. But just from watching the games and stuff, they seem to be productive. And that's why, then you watch the next game, and one of them gets 0 minutes, and you're like, "Well, what happened?"
It has to be frustrating for the players too. Yeah. They're obviously frustrated, especially if they're like saying stuff to the media, like Monroe did, like, "Well, ask Kidd why I'm not getting minutes," and with Henson sort of a subtweet towards the team, like posting the sign saying, the Bucks would have won if you'd gotten minutes." I think he actually deleted the post because I looked for it on Instagram the other day, and I think he might have deleted it. But I swear it happened. It might still be on his Twitter.
All right, so here's what I think, guys, and I want to get your opinions, and then we'll move on to Paul Pierce. And as I put in the notes on the Slack that you guys don't care about, remembering the Big Three era. So, God, the other guys care about. All right, so here's what I think is going to happen now that Middleton is coming back, and I'm going to operate under the assumption that he's going to be good as an eternal optimist. I think Chris Middleton, you know, I mean, he had a clearly really bad injury, but I want to believe that he's going to be back to normal. Might take a couple of weeks, but whatever. Let's say he is. I think that the reason they got Michael Beasley is because they got these point guards who could play off ball so that they could figure out someone who could work next to point Giannis, right? Then they got Michael Beasley, right? So that they would have someone who could run the show, vaguely. I mean, he's not really running the show, but he's sort of like, Jamal Crawford in a sense, right?
Right.
But now I think what's going to happen is that since they have such a bad bench, I think that probably it's going to stagger either Giannis onto the bench or Jabari with the bench.
Whoa.
No. He means that Giannis will have to run the he'll start, and then he'll keep him in longer to run the bench unit, right? Yeah.
Oh, my God. I thought you meant come off the bench.
No. I just mean, like, now that they have another, like, you know, real threat, and Chris Middleton last year developed, like, a threat off the dribble, which is, you know, nuts. But I just feel like now that they have Chris Middleton, that, you know, that they'll be able to play Jabari, you know, off the bench a little bit, right? Or not off the bench, but, you know, alongside
with
the bench
units.
Yeah,
with the second unit or the third.
Yeah. I mean, what do you guys think?
I think that I had Milwaukee as a probably top, you know, four, maybe a top four team in the offseason before Middleton's injury. And then after his injury, I was like, you know what? They might not make the playoffs. And because he just makes him so versatile. He plays anywhere from 2 to 4, anywhere from 2 to 4. He can guard from 2 to 4s. He's an excellent shooter. He's getting better off the bounce. He's, you know, he's a decent rebounder. He's definitely like, you can call him a poor man's, like a very poor homeless man's Kevin Durant. In fact, the fact that he does everything, but, you know, he's not Kevin Durant. But yeah, he got size, he got length, and to be able to put out a lineup of, you know, let's say Brogdon, Middleton at the two, Jabari and Giannis, and then whoever at center. That's ridiculous. So yeah. he gives them a whole different level of versatility. As we see, Kid likes to he likes to do things by feel. So we'll see a lot of switching long lineups out there. Mm-hmm. He can even run point sometimes, right? Middleton's a decent ball handler. He's not really a point guard, but he can bring the ball up and initiate a little offense. So I think it makes them so much. The thing is though, like, chemistry is such a fickle thing. And right now, we know Milwaukee's not. Yeah, they're kind of floundering a little bit, right? They're not playing great right now. I think he'll bring a little stability, and he's going to help. I just don't know if it'll be enough, and if he'll
or
be,
how soon,
right? Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's probably going to take a couple weeks.
Yeah, round back into shape. Yeah, so it's that's the thing, right? Because every game counts now, and where are they sitting right now?
Yeah, I mean they're right now they're 22-28. They're like a half game back of the eighth spot in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's not bad. They got plenty of time, man. And we still got what 30 games left in the season. So, give him a couple weeks, get himself back up to speed, and jibe with the new teammates, and they'll be fine.
Yeah, right. they also get like 5 games before the All-Star break that they can ease him back in. Then he gets a week off with the All-Star break. So, see what he does. But I'm with James. Like, the one thing, and I went back and watched some Middleton highlights this week to kind of get a gauge, because I forgot how good he was. Like, the thing that surprised me the most was that he can facilitate and do some things with the ball. Like, he can play the point a little bit. Like, he was averaging over 4 assists last year. So, I totally forgot that. I thought he was just kind of a one-trick pony. and just going to be a shooter and also a really solid defender. But he actually can initiate the offense, which maybe then our boy Dellavedova won't get as many minutes.
Well, I think it's going to be Beasley losing all of his minutes because I think the reason why he was a good fit in Milwaukee is because they don't have anyone to initiate a good bench offense. And he, it's sort of like what I was saying with Jamal Crawford, right? That's what they've done with the Clippers is like they've had just flotsam coming off the bench, like just terrible bench units every year. And so, you know, their bench offense essentially is just Jamal Crawford trying to make something happen. And I think that's sort of what they've been doing with, his power forward equivalent in Beasley. But now I think that they can do that with Jabari. And that's why I was saying that I think Beasley's going to lose his minutes.
So what's your starting lineup going to be? Your ultimate starting lineup with when Middleton gets back?
I think it's going to be, I think Brogdon's going to get the starting spot, Middleton, Jabari, Giannis, and I think Greg Monroe is going to get the starting spot. I think Jason Kidd does know that he's the best center. If your offense is being run by Michael Beasley, then you should really probably have the whole Brogdon and Monroe thing off the bench. I get that. I understand. But now your bench unit, if you stagger, like I was saying, put Tony Snell in some of the starter minutes, then your bench unit is like, what, Jabari, and then you can have Henson. You can have Snell in a lot of those minutes. You can have Dellavedova, and then Jason Terry. I don't know.
Well, listen, we still have one guy that literally no one mentioned because he hasn't gotten any minutes, but I still have hope for Rashad Vaughn. I am a Rashad Vaughn fan. Guys, just I have faith. He's still
so here's
really
the
young.
Problem. Rachel, okay. I'm with you because I really like him, and I was like pushing from last year, and Bucks guys made fun of me because like, oh, he stinks.
Same.
I'm like, guys, he's a rookie, guys. What do you want? So, but here's the thing: I think guys like him, almost like, and bear with me before you guys jump on me, like Deion Waiters, their game is like they just need time and space and time to go out there and play and make mistakes when they're young. And Milwaukee is not that place for him. You know what I'm saying? Huh. It's not the place for him to go out and just make mistakes and be a rookies and young players are usually bad. He never got a chance to go out there and just be bad for long stretches of time and like figure out, okay, I can't do this. I need to do this. He never got a chance to do that, and he's not going to get that chance because Milwaukee's, they're trying to be in the playoffs. So right. I think that's what kind of ruined Jeremy Lamb in OKC. He never got a chance just to be bad because if he was bad, they'd sit him down. And they sat him down for long stretches for months and weeks because they're like, well, we can't play you because you're not good. And he's like, well, I can't get good because I can't get minutes to get better. It's a cycle. So that's what worried me about Vaughn.
So yeah. Rachel, this will be the last thing on the Bucks. Actually, this time, map out the rest of the season. What your expectations are for what you think is going to happen? Are they going to make the playoffs? Or is Middleton, struggling to come back from injury? Just what do you expect? After 82 games are up.
Well, they are going to make the playoffs if it's the last thing that they do. I really, really believe they'll make it, even if they get the eighth spot. I mean, I can't accept them missing it. And there's just too much talent, especially with Giannis. I feel like I'm hoping after the All-Star break, they're going to come back re-energized. I'm hoping Chris is going to have some time to get familiar with the guys, re-familiar, get more comfortable again. I think they can get up to the seventh spot. I was a lot more hopeful a couple weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago even, but I'm hopeful for the rest of the season. I think it's a really talented group of guys, and each night you see flashes. You see what they can do, and then they kept losing. But I do have faith in the team. I think that they're going to make the playoffs, and like the motto is, or their saying is, own the future. So it is kind of a lot of looking towards, I feel like sometimes it's just looking towards next season a bit too much. Like, oh, well, next year it'll be better. But then it's kind of at the point where, well, when is the future? You know, it's been own the future for 2 years now. So I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic. I'd say seventh or eighth spot, maybe six if I'm going crazy. But that's just me being optimistic.
Okay.
Did you guys real quick, did you guys see that piece by, I think, was it Ziller or we're talking about Zach Lowe, I think, where he basically said, you know, where teams are on January 20th or something, middle of the month, January, is basically where they end up at the end of the year. And so, like, he took a snapshot back then. And I don't know if Milwaukee was in the picture back then.
Yeah, but they were missing Middleton.
The East is so unpredictable, though, and not that great at the bottom. And we'll see. We'll see if Middleton helps or hinders them. I mean, not that it really hinder them that much, but the chemistry might obviously be off at first.
Yeah, well, and you know, Detroit's looking better. I'm waiting for Chicago to fall all the way out. I don't think they're going to get better, but yeah, I think the top six is kind of locked in. The Pacers have a bad stretch coming up, like a really tough stretch, where they got the Cavs and the Warriors and the Spurs coming up. So they might actually drop a few, but yeah. Milwaukee definitely could leapfrog. I don't like Charlotte either. You know, I don't like what Charlotte's doing. So yeah, they could definitely hop back into like that 7 seed.
Yeah. Well, you know, regardless of which direction it goes, up or down, you can listen and keep track of the team by checking out Hear the Deer, our newest A-Team podcast covering the Milwaukee Bucks over at almightyballer.com and blogtalkradio.com/ABPN. Rachel's going to be hosting that. Clearly, she knows everything there is to know about the Milwaukee Bucks, as you can tell by this prior 30 minutes. And if there's anyone who knows...
Yeah, sorry about that.
If there's anyone who knows... everything there is to know about the truth, it's the guy who hosts the podcast. So James, I just want you to kick off. I actually feel like I should explain that. Our Celtics podcast on the network is The Truth Celtics Podcast, hosted by James Hollis, who's on this podcast, I'm pretty sure.
I'm here. Yep.
So, I'm really, you got to be DeAndre Jordan here. I'm just going to lob the ball up sort of in your general direction. You got to slam dunk it. I'm not going to give you a really on time pass. So just go, you know, like talk about Paul Pierce, talk about the big three.
Like a Raymond Felton lob or a Chris Paul lob?
No, a Deli lob.
Oh God.
Well, I'm going to JaVale McGee it probably because, okay. So Paul Pierce, what he means to the Celtics really can't be defined by just talking about it. He was, you know, he was basically Mr. Basketball. He was the late 90s, you know, 2000 and the early 2000 version of Larry Bird for Boston. Sure, the team had, you know, went through some tough times before they got the other two guys, the big three. But Paul Pierce was that constant, even through the trade rumors. Even through the, you know, he was disgruntled. Even he, there was, you know, I remember there was one season, I don't know if you guys remember this, where he was just surly and yelling at the refs. It was a bad time in Boston. It was some dark times he went through. But he was always that guy. And I don't think a lot of people remember just how actually dominant he was for a long stretch of his career. People just remember him, you know, as a elite one-on-one scorer. But, I mean, he had a nice stretch in Boston from 2000 to 2003. The man averaged 26, 7, and 4 with 2 steals. He was legitimately one of the best perimeter players in the league. And the record that Boston had at the time kind of covered that up. You know, multiple-time All-Star. I'm one of those players hang on for too long. And this is more relief for me than some feeling of, you know, pride or sadness for Paul Pierce to get ready to retire. Because, I mean, he came in the game just to hit a three-pointer and the crowd goes nuts. We're holding on to those memories because the big three was such a big part of the NBA landscape for so long in the, you know, from 2007 to 2012. 5 years is a long time. You know, people just look at it as a blip, and we always wonder what could have been with only one championship. But yeah, to see him going now is just, you know, he's getting 12 minutes a game this year, 18 last year. To see that just makes me kind of sad, and I'm ready for him to retire. Because I want to remember him as the dominant player, as the truth in Boston, and not this guy who, you know, holds up his finger and waits because he hit a single three-pointer at the end of a loss to the Clippers. So, well,
Danny,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, last thing, we'll always remember him really fondly, and, you know, he's a knockdown Hall of Famer. And it took me shifting my perspective from I want the big three type of team back to appreciating what they have, because that Boston team was, you know, they literally had the respect and they put fear into any team in the league at their heights of their power. So that's it's a standard they set in Boston that we're trying to get back to in Boston, and it's a ways to go. But we respect him for what he does, and I hope that the captain, you know, rides off into sunset and enjoys his retirement at the end of this year.
Yeah, Daniel, you want to run with that?
I mean, I'm like kind of shivering a little bit because as James is talking, like my favorite player, maybe ever besides Jordan, is probably Dwayne Wade. So as he's talking about Pierce hanging on too long, man, I'm thinking Wade just is going through, starting towards the end of that right now. And I can see Wade kind of doing a similar thing. Cause I remember like from Paul Pierce from like 2000 to like 2007, I mean, he was averaging like 25 a game pretty consistently. On the teams with like him and Antoine Walker. I mean, he was sensational. And I mean, it's just the way that things kind of work nowadays, people just recency bias is such a big thing, especially on the Twitter universe and stuff. So people kind of forget quickly how good he was. And the fact that he has been hanging around the last 4 or 5 years, people do kind of forget. And then he did kind of take a little bit of a backseat when the boss did have the big three, but no, I mean, he was tremendous. I mean, back, you know, again, from that 2000 to 07 stretch, he was one of the, what, James, top 10 players in the league, probably?
I mean, I don't think a lot of people, like you said, remember how just all-around excellent he was as a basketball player.
You could not guard him. I mean, you could not. It was just, I mean, he basically had a game, and he always had an old school game, so like he wasn't relying on athleticism. It was real fun to watch. It was a different kind of player that nowadays we don't see too many guys like that.
You're up, Rachel.
I wasn't the biggest Pierce fan, but obviously you respect
let's get into it. Like, no, you don't have to be respectful. Like, it's basketball, you know, it's throwing an orange ball through a hoop.
Right. No, I think it was just like him and Garnett. I now that he's doing the TNT stuff, he's more likable. But I didn't really like Garnett as a person. I mean, I'm kind of weird. Like, I kind of choose who I like and dislike, not only based on how they play, but kind of like their attitude and how they treat other players on the court. I'm kind of partial to that. Maybe it's because I'm a woman, but I didn't really like Garnett's vibe. And Pierce, I mean, you have to respect his game, though. I mean, I laughed a little bit that he only played 5 minutes. I thought he was going to play more than 5 minutes tonight. But, I mean, he means a lot to Boston, so I was happy for Celtics fans. I mean, there's not much else I can say. I was happy for them. He was the second all-time scorer for the Celtics, right?
Yeah, I think that's right probably behind Bird, I guess. Somebody like that. He's awesome.
Behind Scott Pollard. Yeah.
I'm not laughing at that joke. I'm not gonna.
I think Paul Pierce, I had a Paul Pierce jersey. It's something, I'm a little bit of a hipster. I have a Paul Pierce jersey up on my wall in front of me. And it is, it's a jersey that makes me proud as a hipster because I bought it before the Big Three formed, as the Celtics were a bad team. Because I just really liked Paul Pierce and I liked his game. I never had the same feelings for Ray Allen and for Kevin Garnett. I appreciate probably from a basketball perspective what they do a little bit more. But I think partially because of the other stuff, like Rachel was talking about, Ray Allen sort of being a weird teammate, afterwards, after KG and Paul Pierce landed on the Nets, he talked a little bit about that. And then Kevin Garnett, I remember Joe Kim Noah talking about Kevin Garnett playing defense on him. Right.
Yes. Okay.
And I guess saying something like just horrific about like his mother or something like that. Like I'm going to like gouge your mother's eyes out and like eat them like during the playoffs, like just to like throw him off.
And Noah grew up like, and he was just like, I idolize you. You were my favorite player. I had your posters on my wall. And I remember like Joakim was like really upset about something, even when he was a rookie. that.
I love
that.
It. I'm eating that up. Break his will, KG. I love it.
Yeah. And the stuff that he said to I think the main reason I dislike KG is what he supposedly said to Tim Duncan, and Tim Duncan's probably my favorite player of all time.
I think that one's true. I don't know if that one's true. That sounds so extreme, but messed up, yeah.
So run through that again? What apparently happened?
He said, yeah, go ahead.
Well, you tell me if I'm wrong. I think Tim Duncan's mom passed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said something like Happy Mother's Day, or, you know, made a snide comment like that. And that's always been the rumor. I don't. Tim Duncan's never verified it. KG, of course, never verified it. But yeah, like he said something like Happy Mother's Day.
Yeah. You know, so, I mean, for stuff like that, I mean, like stuff like that is why I don't have a Garnett jersey up on my wall. But I mean, Paul Pierce, you know, he's a Clipper now, but he was around the Celtics for so long and was such a fixture. And, you know, there was all this weird stuff going on, or it was a turbulent time for the Celtics. But I mean, he just, you know, was a good teammate, I think, for the vast majority of it. I mean, I also like it's a time to appreciate like how awesome that big three team was. I just really like how it was constructed. I feel like in a lot of ways so much of the modern NBA is based on what they had going. They had right
defensively. Yeah, they Tibbs really instituted that strong side flood, and you know, the ice, and all the other teams copied that, and that kind of made it things. It pushed the arms race in the NBA to where it is now, as far as made offenses adjust. So that's true. They did some good stuff.
Yeah.
My one problem, I would say, is that if I could go back in time, I'd do something where they didn't have Rondo, because now we have some of the worst Rondo stands in the world, and they don't understand that Rondo was, like, initially at least, was a bit player on a team with three Hall of Famers, and that's why he looks so amazing. And now, well, what are you talking about? Rondo's a champion. He was the best player on that team at times. So that just to get rid of that, I might almost give up the championship.
I mean, specifically on that team, I mean, to close the game, I might be remembering this wrong, but I think in a lot of games they played to close out games. Eddie House, yeah, Eddie House, Ray Allen, I think James Posey and Kevin Garnett. Paul Pierce.
Whatever. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, he couldn't shoot free throws, so they would take him out late in games because he was a liability. So whatever.
Yeah, but also the spacing is so good there.
Yeah, so I respect
I think on offense, that's sort of part of it.
It was, but you know, if they had a lead, it wasn't so much about the spacing. It was the fact that teams would literally, you know, they wouldn't care about it. They'd foul Rondo, and like you said, they'll just sit in KG's lap instead of guarding Rondo at the 3-point line. So, yeah, it was pretty annoying.
Yeah, see,
this is what's beautiful about the Paul Pierce legacy. I mean, it was about Paul Pierce, right? And we just turned into a KG hate fest.
was anyone bothered by specifically him saying I want to, or it's official, I'm going to retire a Celtic, and then him not retiring a Celtic? Was anyone bothered by that?
Who? KG?
You? No, Paul Pierce.
Pierce? No, I don't care. Doesn't matter. I mean, what they're going to do probably is give him a little one-day contract, let him retire the Celtic. Retire. Yeah, it's fine. That doesn't matter.
You know, I think it utterly invalidates his career.
No.
Wait, how?
No, he's being facetious, guys. That's a Chris joke, which means it's terrible.
Hey.
let me say, you can go on Google, and if you just type in like top insults by KG, I mean, the list is vicious. So I just recommend everyone to do that. And I forgot the Charlie Villanueva.
The cancer patient comment.
That one.
Said he was a locker room cancer, guys. He didn't call him a cancer.
Dude, that's like you're being like a Trump supporter right now. You're just like, oh no, he meant out of our
ears.
Don't
you ever, ever put me and Drumpf in the same sentence.
But you get what I'm saying? Like, I mean, he probably called him a cancer patient. Like, but it's like explaining it away.
Yep.
Yeah.
He did. I know.
So As far as where the Celtics are right now, and what I put is in remembering the Big Three era, we can think about whether or not the Celtics are going to be able to build a Big Three of their own. An interesting question, I think. Well, first, if you think Isaiah Thomas and Al Horford can be, you know, two sides of that triangle. And it's also an interesting question because the trade deadline is on February 23rd. And, you know, we'll see whether or not it happens. So, you know, I guess we should start with... no one thinks Isaiah Thomas isn't good enough to be part of a Big Three, right? Like, he's... Can we just, like, skip that one and go straight to Al Horford? Like, I mean, he's amazing, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I don't like the way this sounds. You guys, I need to hear a little more positivity from you other two guys.
I mean, just defensively worries me a little bit.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Hold on. Let's be real, because Steph Curry just won unanimous MVP, and
right,
we know
right.
Steph Curry's not a strong defender.
Agree. Agree, but I mean, also, look at the team. Draymond, you know.
It doesn't matter. My point is, you can't just... put that on him then. I mean, just still, you're saying about other people.
That's why I said, yeah, I'm with you. I agree.
Don't get me started, bro.
I think we wouldn't talk about it as much. I mean, like, last year we weren't talking about Isaiah Thomas's defense because the Celtics had, like, a top three defense in the league,
well,
I'm pretty sure.
This is my thing. Even now they're talking about it. My man Matt Moore, that's HP Basketball. I love the guy to death, but, you know, he says, you know, he's a fourth quarter killer. What team is he killing? Boston's won 14 of their last 18 and 7 in a row. So, I mean, what are we really doing right now?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I get it. And this is, I'm going to go back to the Jeff Van Gundy quote that sticks with me from a couple weeks ago. He said, this fascination we have with trying to assign numbers to everything in basketball is killing a lot of the joy. The guy is the number two scorer in the league now. He just led the, he led since January. He's been the leading scorer. He's averaging almost 30-6. Any other player averages 30-6, you don't give a damn what he's doing, especially your team's winning. But because he's 5'8", you know, we're gonna drilling down on him for his already. Like, my point is, everyone already says he's a bad defender. So, like, every time somebody brings it up, I'm like, you're not bringing anything new to the table. Everyone already knows he's a bad defender.
Yeah,
they're still winning. No one can stop him in the fourth quarter. So, what are we talking about? You know what I mean? So, yes, I think even though we just said we're not going to talk about Isaiah, we just end up talking about Isaiah. So, my bad.
So, what about Al Horford, though? And let's start with Daniel this time.
Do I think he'd be part of a Big Three that could, like, win a title?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, no. Yeah, Al Horford. Like, do you think that he's good enough to be the third?
I think if he's number three, and they get, like, a stud number two, then possibly. But that, to me, it's a stretch, especially seeing him play the last, I'd say, starting the second half of last year and this year, because he keeps going further and further from the basket. I'm pretty sure one of these days he's going to be standing by half court. He's so far away from the hoop. not getting rebounds, not playing inside. So I think he can be, but you better get a stud number two.
That's yeah. Fine. Yeah. I think Al Horford has been really good this year. I think he's been underrated. What do you think, Rachel?
Yeah, I think Al gets way more slack than he did. Well, maybe slack's not the right word. I'm just thinking about that app now. But he gets a lot of crap, maybe is the word I'm looking for.
That's the opposite of slack.
Is it? Okay. Oh, okay, crap.
Guys, do you hear that? Slack is the opposite of crap.
Okay, guys... I meant to say crap. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He gets a lot of crap. Maybe it's people that purely look at the stats and don't actually watch him. Maybe there's still Hawks fans that are upset, but personally, like, I'm a little biased because I know the Horford family and I think that they're amazing and I love them, and his sisters are incredible and knowledgeable. And I met Al before and he was really sweet, and he liked my cat t-shirt. I had a cat t-shirt on. That's has nothing to do with anything, but I like him. I think he's a great guy, and I like when good people are good at what they do at their job. And I think he just gets a lot more crap than he deserves. And I think he's been good. I as for a Big Three, I would say I would agree that they'd need a pretty good two. But I mean, he's a solid guy. He could be the number three.
Yeah, you know, as with Isaiah Thomas, we would talk about some of Al Horford's flaws a lot less and just recognize all the things he does well if the team was constructed in a different way. I mean, I think that, and Al Horford thinks this too, I think, you know, going further and further away from the basket, like Daniel was saying, that's okay if you're a four, right? and Al Horford thinks he's a four, and I think he's a four. I think that, you know, if you had like a Rudy Gobert or something at center, we wouldn't talk about like, oh man, he's not a good rebounder though, because I mean, rebounds would be covered. He's a really good defender, but he's more of like a help system defender because he came from the Hawks system and that's what they do. But if he was still on the Hawks and it was Paul Millsap who went to the Celtics, we wouldn't talk about that because Dwight Howard is there to protect the rim.
Right.
So I think that he can be the third guy because, like, if we had Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley and a really good defensive center who could be just like, again, Tyson Chandler in his prime, and then Jimmy Butler or someone like that, right? As like the 1-2 is them, right? And then the 3 is Horford. If you add in, you know, a really good defensive center and Avery Bradley, that's totally a title team, right?
Yeah, of course. I back them. Let's not say of course, because LeBron James is in the league. And so
a contender.
I just feel LeBron is the rule in the East, no matter what.
If you get Jimmy Butler,
yes, I mean, what LeBron destroyed Jimmy Butler in the playoffs too. That I get what people keep trying to do this, but I mean, what I don't know what else you want me to say. It's like LeBron James is so far above. Do they win a couple games? Sure. Does it make them contenders? I don't think so. But I think we're also negating the fact that so much of the space Isaiah has now, when he's attacking the rim, shooting his mid-range, if there was another big man clogging that lane because Al Horford was hanging around the rim, it changes everything. So I said this on another podcast too, where it's like, I'm going to give like 25 to 30% of Isaiah's improvement. I'm going to give that to having Al Horford on the team. I say Al Horford is not, he's not going to wow you with his stats, but he's like, he's the perfect offensive and defensive lubricant. He makes everything so much easier for everybody else around him. You know what I mean? I mean, we can say what you want. It's not many, he's averaging like 15, 7, and 5 this year. That's like, not many big men are doing that. And he's at, I think, a couple blocks in there, too.
Isn't he the ranked the number one center with assists? He has the most assists of all. He's like number one as a center for assists.
Probably, because, I mean, he's averaging 5 a game. I don't think they're the big man. I know that Boogie's up there, too. Boogie's averaging probably like 4 or something.
But I was going to say Plumlee's only other one I could even think that would be close.
Hmm. Right. So, I mean, he just makes the game easier for everybody else. And his glaring weakness, of course, is the same thing that the whole weakness of the whole team. They don't rebound very well. So, him being the center, he takes the biggest brunt for that.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of it's not his fault, because, I mean, it's funny because, I mean, you kind of bring this full circle. I mean, look at the Boston bigs. Jarebko, Olynyk, Zeller, Amir Johnson. I mean, we were talking about the Bucks bigs, right? I mean, it's pretty similar to the Celtics. What's Brad Stevens going to do at that spot? Now, Stevens is not crazy like Jason Kidd, but with the minutes, he doesn't know what to do either. So Horford's in a tough spot because, I mean, he doesn't really have a lot of help. Someone playing, you know, another big guy to help him out.
Yeah, Amir Johnson's not the answer. In a perfect world, they'd somehow land a guy like Nerlens Noel or what's my other guy's name? Serge Ibaka would be a good fit there, but I think he's gonna be too expensive this summer. So
I think Al Horford is like Serge Ibaka. I think they need like DeAndre Jordan. They need like a real center.
See, I'm talking realistically. There's only one DeAndre Jordan, and there's no.
I just mean realistic. Like the player type, right?
Yeah. There's only so many. We know there's only so many of those guys in the league. So I'm trying to. You can live in your pipe dream world, Chris. I'm being realistic.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Nerlens Noel. I mean, he's under that umbrella.
No, that's gettable. Yeah, that's gettable. So he could. I mean, one thing though, Nerlens hasn't been rebounding very well this year. I've been watching him, and he's been fine defensively, and he's been great for Philly, but he's not rebounding well, which is kind of just disconcerting for me. But because that's what, really, we just need a space eating rebounder. Somebody suggested Vucevic. Hey, space eating rebounder. I wouldn't be too averse to that. I wouldn't want to give up a lot for him. But
that'll help the defense.
Yeah, and that's the problem too, right? Yeah, the defense has been bad, and Vucevic, even though some of my Orlando Magic friends are sending me the metrics about how improved Vucevic is this year, and I'm pretty sure I want to say, well, I'm pretty sure playing besides Bismack Biyombo and Serge Ibaka have something to do with that, you know. But
Bismack Biyombo would be a good fit.
Not that money. He's making too much.
Oh,
money.
Right. But I just mean like, so Bismack is maybe the low end of the type of center that I'm talking about. I think that they could really use a rim roller. And you know, part of that is that I think Isaiah Thomas is sort of a guy who, could get like a Chris Paul game going on. Because like one thing that people don't talk about with Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan is that I think the angles work a little bit better. And plus like the ball has further distance to travel and you have more time to sort of collect yourself. Just like tenths of milliseconds, right? Or not tenths of milliseconds, but tenths of seconds, right? And I think the fact that like Chris Paul is a little bit shorter and DeAndre can like sky for that, I think that helps his like lob potential, right? And also, you know, I think Isaiah Thomas and the fact that, you know, he is sort of short, he has such a good game from within 8 feet.
This is like the nerdiest analysis I've ever heard of a guy throwing lobs.
Well, just it's geometry, absolute man.
Absolute worst analysis.
What do you think about that, though?
I think it's ridiculous. I think that Isaiah's awesome, and I think that they need a center. I'm not going to talk about the angles of the lobs and the trajectories and the milliseconds. Get out of here, Chris. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, I zoned out. I was looking at the Kevin Garnett insults.
What is wrong with you,
Chris? Are you still on Kevin Garnett?
You got past him, man. I was talking about Paul Pierce's legacy.
Daniel.
But,
okay, I started
you,
it.
You know
sorry.
Who I wanted? You defend me? I wanted my guess, I think Onowaku. He's in Houston now, the rookie. Onowaku was one guy I wanted. He's one of those kind of just get up and down rebounder, shot blocker, big
Harrell, man. Or Harrell?
Montrezl. Oh, he's a little too small. I'm tired of the undersized center, so no, he's too small.
He's got an amazing offensive.
He's great in what they do and how they play in Houston. I don't want another undersized big man, even though he's a great motor. I get it. But, Onowaku is who I really wanted in the draft. And I also wanted the kid in Memphis. What's his name? They drafted the kid this year.
You should check out
with me here. Hold on. I'm stuck on this. The Memphis kid. They drafted the Grizzlies. Boston actually drafted him and then traded him to Memphis.
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about. I actually really don't like him. Point guard?
No. Big man.
Okay. I know who you're talking about. Deontay Davis.
Yes, I wanted Deontay too. I get it though. They're trying to win now. They don't have a lot of time to babysit and groom a guy. I even wanted. Do you guys watch college ball at all?
Mm-hmm.
I honestly don't have time. I spend too much time watching the NBA.
Yeah,
I do the research for the draft, and I wanted the kid Prince eBay. IBEH is his last name. Go look at some footage of him. And you look, wow, but he didn't even get, you know, a look anywhere. So obviously I didn't follow his career, but I heard that he's a pretty dumb, like just not a good player. But physical profile, he was like, he's huge. He can hop
6'10".
He was good. He looked good on film. I YouTube a lot of his film. I saw him, but that's what they need. They need somebody like that. A pogo stick who can block shots. And of course, ideally, if they can stretch the floor a little bit. That's
Jonathan Isaac.
I don't know who that is. So no,
I thought you said you wanted. Dude, he's projected to be like 3 or 4 in this year's draft.
The answer is still no. I don't know who that is. So now, again, see, the problem is this, and I get it. They're going to be picking probably 1, 2, or 3. That's awesome. It's so hard because look at Jaylen Brown, number 3 pick, and he's only getting like, you know, he can barely get minutes for the simple fact that they want to win now. And rookies, by and large, are bad. Rookies are just bad as they get adjusted to the NBA game and they learn and they're physically outclassed and they're, you know, they're rookies. So that's gonna be a big problem. I mean, in where they draft,
unless they trade the pick for,
which is fine too. Yep,
the third part of the big three, right? I mean, Markelle Fultz for Jimmy Butler. I mean, who says no?
Probably Chicago.
The Bulls. The Bulls say no.
Bulls can never. They cannot trade Butler. Like if the Bulls
they can.
Okay,
they
so
can and they probably
Butler
should.
And okay, so Markelle Fultz, Jay Crowder, and Marcus Smart for Jimmy Butler.
I mean, I do it. I don't know if Boston. See, again, it's so much harder to just say, give up this top 8 player, this top 10 player, and be really bad for 2 years.
Markel
Fultz, easy for us to say it's what dope. They need. No, it doesn't matter. He's a rookie. He's not going to be good for two. He's not going to be a real impact player for at least two years. Let's just be real. I get it. I mean, look, Anthony Davis.
Smart would be good for Chicago.
Sure, he would be, but it's just the fact that now, like, the Bulls management is about making money and putting butts in seats. And even if they're terrible this year, people still come and the Bulls still support Jimmy Butler because he's a really good player. Same reason right. that everybody was saying, hey, OKC should trade Russell Westbrook now that Kevin Durant's gone, get something for him. It's not that easy. Every team wants a player like Jimmy Butler or Russell Westbrook. So when you have them, you don't just say, okay, things might get bad in a couple years. Let me just trade them. That's just not what you do.
Markel Fultz for Hassan Whiteside. I mean, there need to be salary.
No. He's not the big. He's not the third of big three. Nope. Keep him away from Boston.
Yeah. Who do you guys? Who do you guys think? Is there anyone who we haven't mentioned? Either Daniel or Rachel.
In terms Mello. Of Boston or just other players.
Not even close.
Just like who would be the big three, right? I mean, we're honoring the big three. Like who would be number three?
I think they got to get Boogie. Like, get rid of your draft pick. I mean, I think Sacramento, their organization is such a hot mess. They'll get rid of Boogie eventually. You give them the right deal, and I think
they probably won't. They're already talking about their
they want to be good now. They don't want those Nets picks.
That's my whole thing. Sacramento thinks they're close, so they're going to keep boogieing and try to keep making shitty moves around them. Excuse my language. Hope you have to bleep that.
Yeah, now I have to bleep that.
I would put nothing past Vlade Divac or that owner, Vivek.
They know that, again, like, Boogie is their cash cow, and if they move Boogie, any sense of relevance they have is gone. That win against Golden State is probably the worst thing for anybody who wants Boogie, because
they acted like they won the title. You saw them celebrate.
But that's the thing. Now ownership's thinking, you know what? Yeah, we're kind of a mess, but hey, look what we can do at our best. Boogie's not – with the new CBA, he's not going anywhere, because they're going to pony up that cash for him, and he's not – I mean, it's – I don't blame him for not turning down $200-plus million. So
well, and actually, that's a good transition into another guy. It doesn't look like Paul George is going to qualify for that. And he's a guy whose contract is up in, I think, 2 years or maybe one. I don't even know. Paul George, like – the Pacers have been hot, but, like, I don't really like their team construction. So what if he says, okay, Larry, like, I'm going to leave? If they can't offer that Supermax, so it's like, you know, you're turning down 1 year. But, I mean, Paul George could probably get, you know, another huge contract. So, what about Paul George, Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Al Horford, and then, I don't know, center?
No, it's fine, too. It's just, again, I mean, I don't know. Indiana's going to do everything they can to hold on to him. And sure, he might not qualify for the, I don't know, this, whatever, but they can still offer more money than anybody else. And if Indy makes a move this summer and, you know, shores up that their wing position and the center position, they're right there. I think they're sitting at fifth right now in the East. So. They're sixth, you know, it's a couple games behind 5-4. So it's you that's the thing about being in the East. No matter what's really going on, you're kind of always kind of in it. And Paul George knows that. They're a couple moves away. Let's be real. The Pacers are a couple moves away, small, like not even big moves away from probably being a top four team in the East.
You think they're a better team this year than they were last year?
I think that they miss Mahimni more than they thought, probably. But I think with Miles getting better, and I think Teague is proving that he can, he's excelling in.
They're better than they were last year, but not like as.
I'll say only for familiarity's sake, and the fact that Miles is a year better, and Paul George is he's settling in finally. First half of this season was a mess, but he's settling in now into the rhythm of the team. Yes, I think they're better. I don't think they're challenging any of those other, you know, Cleveland, Boston, Raps.
Well, I mean,
even the Wizards right now. So I think here's superior, but
here's the thing with the Pacers. I mean, we talked about. I'm pretty sure James or we have talked about rather. The effect that Monte Ellis being the shooting guard had on Paul Pierce for a while last year. So and over the course of series, So
what kind of accent is that? That's a, does she have an accent?
Yeah, I have Australian series. So yeah, I just think it's funny. Yeah, God, I lost my train of thought. A couple years ago,
you're talking about Monte Ellis.
Yeah, while Monte Ellis was on the Pacers, he like ruined the spacing and made them really bad. And when he got replaced by CJ Miles, Paul George, at the same time started to spike and become better over the course of the year. So I think that's what's happening, except this time with Jeff Teague, who, though the narrative I think was written about him when he started off being one of the worst players in the NBA for the first month, I think that now, I mean, you look at the last couple of months, and he's been, I mean, like a top three or four point guard in the East. So, yeah, three or four behind Lowry. Okay, four.
he's but, been good. Let's say that, yeah.
Yeah, he's been really, really good. And I think that that has helped out Paul George because, you know, I think their team struggles with spacing a little bit. And if you struggle with spacing, you have to have a guy who at least has gravity. You have to give help defenders a reason to not help. And if Jeff Teague is really good, then that happens. And if he's really bad, then that doesn't. And then Paul George has, you know, another defender who can help and dig and screw him up on drives and stuff. And that sucks. One guy like that, getting back to the Celtics, and this will be the last guy that we touch on. What do you think about Carmelo? Would you like trade Jay Crowder for Carmelo?
No.
What do you guys think?
Just straight up Crowder for Melo?
Yeah, sure.
Any kind of deal. Just real quick, Jay Crowder this season averaging 14-5. He's shooting 43% from three almost on almost six attempts a night. He's the best, you know, wing and even some power forward defender we got. He's a disruptive defensive guy.
I think he's been bad defensively this year.
No, he hasn't been. The only reason he's been bad is because when Bradley out, they got him chasing like the best perimeter guy around, and like he's guarding twos, and they're running him through screens, and they're kind of killing him because he's a big solid guy. He's not meant to be, you know, he's not Paul George who can ghost through screens, which is something Paul George does. Like almost, it's almost a supernatural thing Paul George does. You can't catch Paul George with a solid screen. Jay Crowder's not that guy. He hasn't been bad defensively. I think he's leading the team in plus minus right now. You know, Jay Crowder's been awesome this year. So for what? No, I wouldn't trade him for an over the hill Melo. And I know, Melo can be still effective. I get it. I'm not saying he's just washed up totally. I'm just saying for what Jay Crowder brings to that team, you don't give that up for Carmelo Anthony.
I mean, I would do it if you want, because I think Melo, I think he could get rejuvenated. He clearly, I mean, you watch him play now. It's just a mess in New York with what's going on with the media, the trade speculation. No one in New York even wants him to be here anymore. Like, he knows it. So I think he would get rejuvenated a little bit. But, like, I think he's got, what, another year before that body just falls apart completely. So if, like, the Celtics think that they can make a run, like, this year and next year, then you can pull a trade like that. Otherwise, go for someone younger.
Yeah. We've watched Melo get dominated by LeBron for how long now? So just bringing him in Boston and saying, oh, Brad Stevens makes it better doesn't change anything. He's still Carmelo Anthony. He's the ball stopper. Him and Isaiah and is like the weakest, quote-unquote, big three you could have. So no thanks.
I also think Crowder means so much to the Celtics. Like, he's brought so much heart. Like, especially, I think it was 2 years ago or 1 year ago that everyone, he was just like the heart of the team. When he got injured, it was huge. And he I remember his defense in the playoffs was just incredible. And just the like ferocity that he plays with. I think Boston has really gotten behind him. I think that
he's definitely a Boston type player. Yeah, he's a Boston type player, and that it would throw everything off. And Melo's like the opposite of a Boston type player. And again, I know that Boston's like not crazy far from New York, but let's be real, Melo's about his brand. Lala's not having it. It's no.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I think the real problem with Melo, honestly, is that, and this has been true for a long time, he's a power forward. If he wants to win, then he should be playing power forward. That's like the bottom line. It is statistically undeniable, right? That his team is so much better when he's playing power forward. But I mean, his team's going to lose anyways in New York. So it's like, what's the point? And he doesn't want to, but, I mean, I feel like if Brad Stevens like, hey, you have to play power forward, or we're going to lose this playoff game, then he would do it.
See, and
the issue is already, Al Horford, I think, is a power forward.
Well, no, and again, he doesn't. See, that's the thing. Melo doesn't address the two biggest things. Two biggest problems right now in Boston is rim protection and defense, and then rebounding. He doesn't really. Sure, he's a better rebounder than Crowder by a little bit, but not by enough to really address it. So, the offense isn't the problem in Boston. It's not the offense. The offense is fine. I think they're like a top like six offense in the league right now. It's the defense. So no, there's no way. I know Ainge isn't even thinking about it.
Yeah, yeah. I think it would maybe be worth thinking about if Al Horford was a different center. I'm saying if.
No.
I was no. Dude, let me.
I'm gonna keep saying no. There's just no. I don't want no. I'll concede that you brought me around on the Boogie point because I watched Boogie some more. That's great. That's your feather in your cap, buddy. I'm not budging on the Melo.
Hey, you know what the feather in my cap is, man? That I run the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, of which you've been listening to Around the NBA. It's our roundtable show. It's also going to be on my feed and the Truth's feed. I'll probably have it be the first episode of Hear the Deer, just so I can get that set up so people can subscribe. And Daniel, I can throw it on yours, yeah?
I mean, I'm actually going to do another podcast tonight still for the big DFS late tomorrow. So yeah,
but you can. Man, Daniel's cranking out content, and you know it's great. So go check out Daniel. He is the host of DG Courtroom. He's also the judge on DG Courtroom. There's also the Bayless and Little Wade. So go listen to them. And I was listening the other day, and it was a day that you didn't do well, which is rare, listener. He had a pretty good voice for internet trolls, and so he's a lot of fun, and you should definitely check out his show. Also, check out The Truth with James Holis. James is at J Holis. Daniel, what's your Twitter handle?
Mine is at Daniel A Green 1, and that's green like the color.
Yeah. You know, James is at J Holis Hoops, and he's hosting The Truth. And James, hey, thanks for coming on.
That's Holas, because if anyone looks for J Hollis, they won't find me. Just make sure they spell it right. So
yeah. And last but the opposite of not least, wait, no, the full not least, right? So last and best, all right? That's what I was trying to say.
Let's not get crazy. Let's not say that at all. Don't say that. How about last and newest?
Wait, I was talking about me. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, God.
Rachel. So, Rachel, we ran through a lot of this stuff, but you know, just go ahead and you should do it one more time for the listener. And again, she's going to be hosting Hear the Deer, which is our A-Team Bucks podcast.
Yes, I will be doing that, and you can follow me on Twitter as well, at Rachel Hoops, Rachel spelled R-I-C-H. Wait, oh, I just spelled my own name wrong.
Wow.
I said R-I-C-H.
It's going to be a great podcast.
Oh, great. I was trying to say, because Michael spelled M-I-C-H-A-E-L, so I was named after Michael, so Rachel, R-A. Oh, my God, I can't spell my own name. Listen, I'm usually asleep by now. This is the latest I've stayed up in a little while, so I apologize. All right. Oh, my God. I spelled it wrong again.
Basketball
just
never
edit
sleeps.
Edit all of this out. Edit all this out.
Please not. Please keep all this in.
R-A-C-H-A-E-L-H-O-O-P-S. I did it.
So.
Okay. That's a horrible reason. Now you're like, okay, why would we follow her? She can't spell her own name.
She was doing me a favor by coming on this podcast because, yeah, she said that she normally goes to sleep at 8 p.m., right, you said, I think?
I'm a grandma. So.
Early to bed and early to rise. So, I think at Rachel, and it's R-A-C-H or C-R. AEL.
See?
Oh, man.
Going all right now.
This podcast is over, guys. We're done. At Almighty Ballin, that's me. Follow at ABPN Podcast and check us out, almightyballer.com and blogtalkradio.com/ABPN. Thanks, listeners. I appreciate it. Thanks, everyone, for coming on. We're going to have some more great roundtable conversations coming up soon. So, subscribe to the feed if you haven't. Just look up Around the NBA on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. So, good night, guys.
Don't follow Chris because he's horrible.
Good night. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, no, definitely. Happy to have you on.
All right.